Well, all right then. Hello, everybody, once again in Turdland. This is your humble correspondent coming at you with another of the latest and greatest installment series of the TFMR podcast. Today, we are going to double back to a guy that I'm really looking forward to talking to again, and that's Mike Krieger. Many of you, or at least you should be by now, are familiar with Mike. He writes a fantastic newsletter email that goes out on a distribution list. It's completely free. It shows up. Heck, I get it, so I often reprint it. I know Zero Hedge reprints just about everything he writes. But Mike also now has started his own website called Liberty Brit. Jeez, I butcher it. LibertyBlitzkrieg.com. You'll see the link right here in the podcast page so that you can go there and check it out. Mike is, man, he's got it. He's got it figured out. He's got it dialed in. He is a good guy to talk to, even if he is a friend of Rennie Andy. We won't hold that against him. No, I tease him. I can only imagine, Mike, you and Andy getting together and having a beer has to be a hoot. Anyway, hey, welcome back to TFMR, man. Good to hear from you.
Hey, sir, good to be back on your show. Yeah, it's pretty funny. Colorado has its fair share of anti-status quo gold bugs, so it's a pretty interesting state to be in, that's for sure.
I guess, you know what? Hey, great minds think alike, they say.
This is where we're fleeing, I guess. I don't know,
There you
but
go.
the more people of a similar mindset that they want to live, around where I'm living, it's perfect.
How did you meet Andy, by the way? I think that's kind of an interesting story.
Yeah, I mean, basically we were similar, I guess, ideologies and way of looking at the world, the financial system, and we had a mutual friend back on the East Coast who, was more of a traditional money manager and who knew Andy. And then finally, when I said I was moving to Colorado, he said, "Hey, you got to meet this guy that I've known for years, Andy Hoffman." And then from there, we just became friends. So that was right before I moved to Colorado. So really late 2010.
God, he's such a smart guy. I get such a kick out of talking to him, and I get such a kick out of reading his newsletter.
Yeah, no, he's great, and he knows what's going on. And what I really like also is, which I think we all share, which is why, I think I'm sure we're going to win this thing, is because, we're relentless. I mean, I could take the hits at forever and just keep coming back because I'll never stop, And I think that these guys are used to people kind of rolling over and, doing what they want based on the little nudges here and the other things there. But people like us will not stop. I mean, I can speak for myself and you and Andy, so, and there's lots of us out there.
Well, to that end, you left a successful career on Wall Street back in, I guess, maybe almost a year and a half ago, something like that. After years at Lehman Brothers and Sanford Bernstein, you were gonna start your own practice, but decided to step away because you didn't like the way the markets look. And now your latest project is LibertyBlitzkrieg.com. Tell everybody a little bit about it and why you started it.
Yeah, sure. So as we talked last time, I recall talking about how I was becoming increasingly uncomfortable with the financial markets in general, and this was, I think, right after the whole IMF global affair. But it was really at that point that I hadn't been sure yet whether I wanted to pursue, at least at the moment, managing, more other people's money, or not. And then it was at that moment, though, really MF Global, that I came to the conclusion that it wasn't safe and I didn't want to put people in that position or even myself. I guess what I mean is I don't want to take responsibility for other people's assets in a system that I personally don't believe in. And so then there was a bit of soul searching to kind of figure out, well, how can I be effective? Because the whole point of managing people's money was to actually protect them and do some good in the crumbling environment. But when I decided that wasn't the most effective way, what I came to was the conclusion was I needed to start my own blog so that I could reach more people on a more consistent basis rather than just once a week, through my weekly emails. And that's what Liberty Blitzkrieg is all about. It's about creating a space for myself on the internet where I can choose, the top two or three stories a day at the most that I think are important, that most people maybe haven't seen and for sure isn't being covered in the mainstream media, and provide my own, angle on it and get it out there. And so far I'm just I'm really pleased with the response and the readership, and it's awesome. It's a lot of fun. I'm really enjoying it, and I'm excited to see, you know, where I take it next. But it's been a really, really fun project. It's only been going on for about 2.5 weeks.
Well, and I want to give it a big hearty thumbs up, because you're it's not just money stuff like I predominantly talk about. You really get into the decreasing amount of liberty that we have in the U.S. and the root causes behind it, and how we can be aware of that and how we can fight against it. I just think it's invaluable, the stuff that you talk about there and the education you give folks.
Well, thanks. I mean, I think what the best thing for all of us to do that are morally opposed to the current status quo is to really, you know, focus on what you think your skill set is, and then get it out there. And of course you do that, and many others do that. And for me, what I think I have a competitive advantage in is understanding history and politics, and human nature and societies and the financial markets, and then trying to link the two for people.
Yeah.
Because there are a lot of people I find out there right now that are awake to, let's say, how corrupt the political system is, but can't connect that to central banking, fiat money, precious metals manipulation. So I'm trying to serve as that bridge to say, look over here, this is what's going on in D.C., and this is how it relates to the financial markets, and this is how it relates to a loss of liberty. Because it's all this interconnected web that if you don't understand how all the pieces fit together, when things get really bad and collapse and there's chaos, you will be potentially misled into the arms of some political demagogue that will take advantage of your ignorance. And that's what I'm trying to avoid.
That's exactly right. You know, and if you don't understand how things are linked together and what is truly happening, you have a tremendous risk of becoming the proverbial useful idiot. In that, you know, in the true sense of that term, I guess there's some debate as to whether, who was it, Trotsky or whomever it was that term is attributed to. There's some debate as to where that was actually used, but as kind of a catch-all term, that's true. If we can massage the opinion through propaganda of the masses, they become useful idiots for promoting whatever it is we're trying to accomplish. And the more well-rounded somebody is in understanding that, the less likely they're going to become one. And you're doing a great job of that. And I just posted something today. Today is Wednesday, as a matter of fact, as anybody's listening to this, about fractional reserve banking and how all money is actually debt and how money is created through debt. And I got to tell you, just even today, I learned something. And so to the extent that we can get that point across, get people wise to the connection between debt and central banking and politics and the loss of liberty that goes with all of that. Well, anyway, it's a challenge, and I sure appreciate your entry into the fight, that's for sure.
Well, yeah, thanks, sir. Thanks for your support and all you do.
Well, all right, so now, you know, you didn't trust the system. Yeah, and you're right. When we spoke last fall, it was about, maybe 6 weeks after the collapse of MF Global. I remember you mentioning at the time being uncomfortable owning any miners because they could be naked shorted several times over. And as an owner of that share, you might come up against several other competing interests in the ownership of that share. Heck, we're just seeing that today, that there is more information coming out about some of the major investment banks naked shorting. We talk about naked shorting in the metals. I take it your trust of the institutions and the system in general probably haven't improved since December, Mike?
Yeah, of course. and there's a couple of things there's a couple of points I want to make on that topic. First of all, yeah, you're right. I did say that, and I sort of have had good intuition on that, and I sort of told people, your listeners, what the right thing to do is. Of course, you know, I held on to a lot of my own miners as a fool, but I'm glad at least I've been able to tell other people, you know, stay away. I'm at least a grown man, a grown boy. I'm a professional in this business, so I can handle it. But I really, really don't want people on Main Street that don't have the stomach for this game to be in it. They should not be in it.
And I bet. Did Andy give you a hard time for still holding your miners?
Yeah, I mean, you know, he has the benefit of personal experience, I know, and, you know, we've talked about this because he went through, you know, complete hell back in 08 when he owned them.
Yeah.
You know, so he went through it and learned. And so, you know, it's like that old saying where sometimes you just have to go through things. You have to learn the lessons on your own.
Yep.
And so I think that's part of, you know, certainly I've learned a lot of lessons about the markets and corruption and everything. But that's all good. I mean, that's all part of, you know, living and learning and all that stuff. But, I mean, I think I do want to make one point on the miners on this topic. First is there's the big fear out there, and it's not one that's not unfounded, is the whole nationalization or super taxes or any of that stuff in the event that these companies ever make any money. But there's another thing that I think may be going on. And in the event that they don't plan on nationalizing these mines, which I'm not convinced they will, although I think it's possible, what would the banks do if they know the end game is near? What they would do is basically short sell these things or derivative sell these things or create so much fear in the minds of people that hold these things to the point where they can actually buy them. So they can actually be in the position to be the ones long these stocks, you know, when the manipulation finally comes to an end. You see what I'm saying? So
yes.
I do think, so if you're a holder of a lot of these mining stocks now, I would say my opinion is a bit different from when last time we talked. I would be more inclined to be long some of these things at this point than I was then. Just because back then, the nationalization fear, the pessimism, the panic liquidation was not where it is today.
Right.
So this, I mean, this, the only thing I can remember in my career that the mining trade feels like is the financial trade in 08, believe it or not. So I have changed a little bit, even though I don't trust the system at all. You know, at some point, you know, assets get marked down to a level where, hey, you know what? They could be nationalized, but if they're not, you've got upside. So I've changed mine a little bit on that. But the other thing that I, you know, as you asked that question, I really want to get across to readers, listeners and readers in the future that I write, is what's going on right now, right, as you know, is the financial war of our lifetime. There will not be anything like this again. This is it. This is the battle. And I think that what this reminds me of is both sides, I think, our side and their side, underestimated our opponents. I know I did. Right back in 07 or 06, when I first started really realizing how messed up things were, when you looked at it, right, and I'm sure you had similar thought process, you looked at it and you said to yourself, oh, there's no way this thing isn't going to collapse. There's no way gold's not going to go to 5,000 an ounce or whatever, and that's that. It was so obvious. But what I, you know, I underestimated what they would do to fight back.
Yeah.
And that was a mistake, but it reminds me of what they used to say about World War I, where the Germans and the French, they both thought the war would be over in a couple months and that they would win. And so I think we found ourselves in a similar situation to World War I, where both sides thought that they would be able to essentially win the war quickly and easily. And it's turning out to be much harder for both sides. So at least I will say this, we have the market and nature and the universal cycles of the world on our side, so we'll win. But just remember, this is essentially like World War I. That's how I see it.
We're all dug into our trenches, but as you said, we have, we're getting some static. Mike, you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, all right. We are dug into our trenches, but like you said, we have the greater armaments on our side with the laws of mathematics and the laws of economics and everything that goes with it. I'm going to double back to the miners for just a second. Have you just kind of put your old analyst hat on? What at some point, doesn't there almost, I mean, there's a price to book value level or price to sales or revenue, whatever level, where there should be some M&A activity that comes in. And we haven't seen that yet, which I, to some extent, surprises me. I mean, does it surprise you?
Well, yeah, I thought about that a lot. So here are a few things. Number one, I think the lack of M&A has to do with the fact that the big companies, their shares are getting destroyed as well.
Yeah.
And every time a big company has announced M&A, their shares are guaranteed to fall 10-20%. And so they don't even dare do it at this point because of the adverse reaction in the market. So I think that's one of the things. But yes, it's been disappointing. But I'll tell you what's been even more disappointing to me, and what is one of the things that I think you're going to need to see to really put a bottom in the sector, is the management teams, from what I can tell, are still just the worst in the entire planet as far as protecting their shareholders. And I understand that, you know, it's tough when you're fighting the government manipulation. I get it. But you got to be smart about things. So, for example, I still get the sense that a lot of these managements are growth obsessed. Okay, so they're like they're not even talking about returning money to shareholders. I mean, Newmont is one exception, but for the most part, you know, they're like, well, we're looking for acquisitions. You know, some of them are like, we're looking like Silver Wheaton the other day, looking for acquisitions. No one wants to hear that. Okay, no one wants you to grow your production any more than you already are going to when your margins are getting destroyed. So my suggestion, which I've said over and over, but I haven't seen it yet, is all of these mining companies should immediately look at their CapEx and say, I am cutting 20% of my capital expenditures on the lowest return projects in my portfolio. So if they have projects that only work at, you know, $1,500 gold, stop spending the money and put that money into dividends. Yeah. Okay? That will cause, I promise, some good action in the stocks. You know, because what no one likes to see is when the companies, you know, can't do their projects, but they're not being proactive about it. Be proactive. Cut out the worst capital expenditure. Increase dividends.
That's an awesome
idea.
Because
then you kill, you know what I'm saying? Because then you kill two birds with one stone, mm-hmm. too. Because you're constraining the future supply. And you're not, because right now, as you know, as well as everybody, these mining companies are just being pillaged because they're being forced to sell their production at a manipulated COMEX price. And so they're basically providing a very valuable resource at manipulated prices and crushing their shareholders. So they need to stop playing this game.
That's
my suggestion to these companies. They need to cut back the capital, return that money to shareholders. People won't care about growth. People don't care about growth right now.
They should make
Why
be making
do you want
money
growth when your margins are terrible.
Well, and they should be making money on the difference between what it costs to produce it versus what they can sell it for.
Exactly, right.
On top of that, if they could start a dividend or double their existing dividend, triple their existing dividend, it's going to make it that much less palatable for somebody to short it.
Yes. And it also is showing, like I said, I mean, it's also saying to people, you know what, if the price is going to be manipulated to the point where I can't make a return on investment, I am not going to invest. That's fine.
Yeah.
It's better than spending all these money on projects and providing the metal to the bad guys at a low price while with no margin. Makes no sense.
Yeah. Well, all right. And now, this is not the smoothest segue in the world, but I wanted to make sure we talked about this. So speaking of the bad guys, let's veer off towards the news of late last week about J.P. Morgan, their alleged, we'll call it, hedge that they had on apparently still have on and is costing them money. Do you have much to say about that, Mike? I'll just leave that open right there and just let you kind of run with it.
Yeah, of course I do. I think the revelation that came out is really positive for ultimately change in the system being going up in smoke, which it needs to go up in, because it's completely corrupt and killing 99.9% of the population of the planet. If it was at all possible to avoid disclosing this, they would have. Okay,
yes.
I mean, Jamie Dimon, you know, even though he's a disgusting character, in my opinion, you know, he's like a smart, savvy gangster. You know, he reminds me of like I feel like I'm watching like Goodfellas when I see him.
You remember the old videos of John Gotti sitting there in his suit, you know?
Right. No, yeah. He sounds like Joe Pesci or something. I mean, uh-huh. it's hilarious. I mean, the guy literally sounds like a mobster, and he is. But he's also astute as far as knowing, you know, what the how angry the public is at the banks. Mm-hmm. And he's also been one of the guys that writes op-eds and gets on CNBC and says, you know, the Volcker rule is bad and the banks, you know, why are people hating on the banks and all this stuff? So this is a huge black eye for him to have gone out there and fight against restrictions on these criminal levered institutions to have to come forth with this. So my guess is, just based on that alone, it's got to be a lot worse than they're saying.
Right.
Because if it was manageable and small, they wouldn't have come out and made this so public.
Yeah.
And also, I've read comments about how he said, you know, it may take to the end of the year to unwind some of these positions. I mean, at the end of the year? What? So there's a problem. You know, there's a big problem. And what I've also said on a few occasions where I've had the chance to, you know, sort of publicly comment on this, is that I think there's a very good chance that this is two derivatives. The derivatives market, what HSBC's losses in subprime in February 2007 was to the housing market. So it's sort of that first, it's like canary in the coal mine, mm-hmm. It's that first news item that makes people realize, oh boy,
uh-oh.
Derivatives, right, this whole derivatives house of cards is gotten so big now that it's becoming unmanageable for the biggest and most powerful bank in the world. And if that's true, then, you know, watch out.
We're supposed to believe that it's okay. The notional number doesn't matter because it's all laid off versus somebody else who lays it off versus somebody else. And so we're all capitalized in this kind of mutual assured destruction. So don't worry about it. Right?
Yeah. The idea being, well, right. The idea being like back in 08 when AIG wrote, you know, insurance credit default swap insurance, and basically then didn't put up any collateral for it and couldn't make the payments. But what happened? The Fed came in and paid Goldman Sachs off, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's what they figure. They figure, you know, we're propping up the system for the politicians. We're creating fraud and Ponzi schemes and derivative, you know, piles of garbage all over the place. But so what? Because the government's never going to let it crash. And that's, you know, that's essentially what they've been doing for a long time. And you know, as you know, derivatives has only gone up since 08. Okay, the balance sheets and percentage of GDP that the big five banks have in the United States is a bigger share than it was before the crisis.
Right.
So you see that this is happening because the banks own the United States government. Period. End of story.
So
they have a gun to the head of the government, and they control it.
So in the end, because all they'll ever do is continue to expand the money supply, continue to print money, continue to go deeper and deeper into debt. Oh, we got our static again. And continue to go deeper and deeper into overall debt. At some point, as that grows exponentially, the music stops. What type of event stops the music, Mike?
Yeah, I mean, I think about this all the time. So we're getting to the point now, and I've written about this, but where the debt is so, you know, enormous and keeps growing, and the amount that needs to get financed all the time just gets bigger and bigger, that there's going to need to be further QE. And I think we all get that. Now, of course, the Treasury market's benefited recently as global managers have just been fleeing emerging market, peripheral Europe debt into Treasuries to some degree, and then mm-hmm. there's the Fed buying.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, this whole debt and deficit thing is only getting worse, and we all see that. So there's going to basically be a point, and it's coming. And I think the Fed's going to have to do something, or we're going to completely crater into oblivion. Before the election. So either probably at the June or July Fed meeting, which is why precious metal suppression is so important right now. But there's either going to be a gigantic infusion of more liquidity into the system by global central banks soon, or there's going to be a debt deflation panic again.
Collapse.
So that's what I think. You know, ultimately, we both know that the debt will be dealt with one way or the other. So it'll either will hyperinflate the currency into oblivion, or we're going to pull a Greece eventually. where we default, you know, where we're going to default on our debt. And I even said that back in, you know, years ago. I actually advocate the fact that we should actually just write it off at some point because it's illegitimate. I believe the debt is illegitimate. And at some point we just need to, you know, say that. But I think they're probably going to try to, hyperinflate it, but we'll see.
There's really no other option. I just don't think that, from the preservation of political and economic and banking power, what other option can you possibly foresee them taking? And I just wonder if there won't be an event that will pull the rug out from under them regardless, you know, whether it's Greek and some sovereign defaults, you know, that just kind of starts tipping over dominoes. I don't know. But
well, here's the other thing that I think we have to think about, right? The reluctance of these guys to have announced QE3 by now,
yeah.
I think says more than anything else, something very important, which is me and you and all of us in precious metals that look at the charts and physical demand, try to figure it out. We're just guessing, right? We really are. And I mean, despite all the things we say or know or insiders, we are guessing. We don't know. We don't know what they've got to sell. We don't know how much gold they can still steal from other people to sell. We don't know any of that. But my guess is they have a lot less to use than anyone realizes, because otherwise I think they would have announced the QE. I think the fact that they haven't makes me wonder if the Bernanke is terrified to announce it because he knows the true situation in the physical market and knows what kind of response that will lead to, buying wise. So he's just terrified to announce it, because the worst thing that could happen is for the Fed to announce, let's say, QE3 and have it just blow up in their face, which I actually think is a decent possibility. Like, you literally have markets react in the opposite way that they've been reacting. So I think that's a big, that's why they're trying to create such a huge cushion in commodities ahead of it.
Yeah. Well, no, that makes sense. And that certainly is consistent with their behavior in the past. I don't think, you know, there's no question about that. I wonder if there isn't a concern that as you go and you recognize there has to be QE, but you've also got the political concern and how they manage that, and then everything that ties in with Europe. Do you think, as you know, and we'll just tie this finally into kind of a political discussion. Clearly, the masses in Europe, and eventually, I'm afraid the masses here in America, are going to be unwilling to settle for any type of, I guess we'll just call it a blanket term, austerity. I was just reading a really interesting article today that was citing another article that was in the New York Times about, and we'll call it, the conservative hypocrisy. And I got to admit to being guilty of this as well, that the conservatives use this idea of we must cut government, we have to get everything under control, blah, blah, blah. But at the same time, love the fact that grandma or mother qualifies for Medicaid so that they don't have to pay for it out of their own pocket. You know, feels entitled to receive the maximum Social Security, even if they don't need it, because they paid into it the whole time. And so I just wonder, when it comes down to brass tacks, if we won't rebel against austerity, if we do and we reelect, I don't know, I call him Obamney, because to me there's not much difference between the two anyway. But gosh, we've already seen such a dramatic drop in civil liberties in the last 8 years. 9 years since 9/11, it seems like it's accelerated in the last three under Obama. What are we going to do, Mike, besides make plans and pick out carpet for the cell we're going to share in the detention camp?
Yeah, you know, look, here's the thing. And you mentioned the conservative hypocrisy, and there's obviously hypocrisy on both sides of the aisle, which is why I always try to, you know, stay out of those arguments,
because they're
so childish and based on usually one or two social issues that get people riled up and put into a certain camp and essentially neutered.
And then they can't used to divide and keep people divided.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Perpetuate.
And it's they're just very emotional charged issues. So it's like when one candidate supports them and hammers on it, then most of the sheeple will just run into their little corner, without even knowing how anything really works.
Mm-hmm.
Early on, what I, you know, for me, like public pensions and stuff, like the extent to which, you know, some of these public employees are being paid in public unions, it's disgusting. But I've been very careful to not get on the bandwagon of, you know, see how bad this is, we got to do something about it, even though it is bad and unsustainable, because it's like you've got these, the establishment, right, bailing out the richest people on the planet, and then saying that school teachers need to cut the pension, right? So it's like the bank. So my whole point, and it's hard to do because it's human nature to sort of get outraged about littler things potentially. But like what I think we all need to do, and we need to be very careful, is keep our eye right square on the enemy, and the enemy is politicians in Washington D.C., central banking, and the big mega banks in the United States. And there are others too. But these are the guys that are bailing out each other at the highest level and to whom no rules apply. You know, a teacher with a big pension gets caught with like a dime bag of marijuana and they can go to jail. Right? whereas Corzine, you know, because he's one of the biggest contributors to Obama's campaign, steals over $1 billion and nothing happens.
Right.
So we really, really need to not get divided, and we need to focus on a mutual parasite at the top, parasitic class, and never take our eye off the ball. Because when this thing goes down, whenever it goes down, we need to know exactly who the problem is and not get distracted and not get pushed around with emotional issues. We need to have a laser beam focused on the enemy. See, think about this, Turd, like J.P. Morgan and Jamie Dimon. The fact that people are still focusing on them and holding their feet to the fire is good, right? Is good. They're not getting away. This is a disaster for him, and he knows it.
Well, in that regard, my final question for you is a question I've given several people. What keeps you up at night? What's the worst case scenario? What do you most worry about?
Yeah, no. What keeps me up sometimes and worries me sometimes is just the fact that I do wonder if I am not being a student of history enough by sticking it out here, standing my ground essentially in the United States, and not getting out because of all the signs, because the telltale signs are there. I mean, like the IRS, you know, saying that basically all they have to do is say you did something wrong and your passport can disappear.
So
in some degree, I feel like perhaps, you know, I'm acting like a German in, you know, mid-30s Nazi Germany. And that does give me some caution sometimes. But at the end of the day, what keeps me going and fighting and not afraid are two things. Number one, we all die, and I'm going to die, but I'd rather go down swinging against these bastards, and I'm willing to do that. And number two is, as we've discussed, the internet and the connectivity of the global population at the moment. I mean, I know you can see through your website, and I can see now through my new website, like, where these hits are coming from.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, imagine, like, people like you and me, who in the past would need to have kissed butt for 20 years in an establishment company to ever have any sort of voice in anything on a global stage. Through the internet, through the free market that is the internet still, me and you, nobodies, are able to get out there and influence thousands, tens of thousands, potentially one day millions of people all over planet Earth. And other people are doing the same thing every single day. So my view is that this is a paradigm change in the history of our species, and because of the tool of the internet, I think we're going to win.
So
I'm willing to risk it because I believe we will win.
All right. So then, finally then, that leads me then, I guess, to what my then concern is we lose personal liberty and freedom, and that the easy answer, the emotional answer, is this fall toward some type of statist, socialist, almost fascist form of government where, you can't have that type of freedom because that's what got us into trouble last time. You can't have economic freedom. You can't have entrepreneurship. You can't have people taking risks. How do we avoid that? How do we avoid, I mean, maybe, I don't know, maybe maybe you disagree and think we should go that way. I don't know.
No, it's a great question. It's been on my mind from the beginning, which is why, you know, I've been so adamant about calling the system we have not capitalism. Okay, that's what we need to do, because it's not. It's crony capitalism.
It's statism.
It's a top down, centrally planned Soviet style economy.
Yes.
And at the margins, yes, there's free market, and there are certain areas that are free, like the internet, and so there is freedom, and market capitalism, on the margin. But for the most part, this is a top down, centrally planned, crony capitalist economy, where the way that 95% of the richest people make their money is through engaging in crony state capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
So we need everyone to understand, and I think they do, that this is not a capitalist economy. Therefore, when it goes down, what we need to blame is the Soviet-style central planned central banking oligarchy that we have running us now. And that's the information war, right?
Right.
We need people to not be misled into thinking that we have a system that we don't. That's all.
Well, and that's the kind of stuff that you write about at Liberty Blitzkrieg, and that's why I would encourage all turdites to go check out that site. Again, one word, Liberty and Blitzkrieg, which is Blitzkrieg, right? I before E.
Yes, sir, you got it right. Thank you.
Do folks become members there to comment, or can anybody just show up there like a Blogspot site and begin commenting? How's it work?
Yeah. So you can comment on the site. And also what I would encourage people to do is, I just started a Twitter account too, which I wasn't on before, and you can sign up to follow me through that right on the site. You can also sign up to get email alerts right through the site. And I mean, if people like what I'm writing and like what they're seeing on the site, I really suggest that. So you can be well aware and sort of on the front line, part of the information army from my site, the Lightning War for Liberty, so that when you get the posts that I do, if you find them interesting or influential potentially, you can then forward that on to friends and family, because we need to spread the message. We need to do it now. And that's it. So please check it out.
Yep, please go there. I think what you do, Mike, is an essential part of this planning process as we prepare for the end of the great experiment, the great Keynesian experiment. Thank you very, very much for spending some more time here in Turdville. I hope we can do this again soon and on a regular basis. And please keep up the good work and keep hammering away. We need you out there.
I'd be happy to do another interview, and thanks a lot, and stay in touch, and thank you for all you're doing as well. And to everyone listening out there, I know you're all doing your own part, and never get down, never get depressed. When anything's going against you, that's when you got to pick yourself up and fight these guys harder, because they are their whole idea is to get you as downtrodden as possible so you stop fighting. You need to redouble your efforts right now.
God, that's a perfect message. Mike, thank you. Let's visit again soon.
Okay, thanks, Dirk.